From the Harry S. Truman Library in Independence, Missouri, the CBS Television Network presents a special news conference called by the former President of the United States, Harry S. Truman. Your reporter is CBS News Washington correspondent Charles von Fremd.
Last Wednesday, former President Harry S. Truman resigned as a delegate to the Democratic Presidential Nominating Convention, scheduled to begin in Los Angeles a week from Monday. Mr. Truman also announced he would not even attend the convention, where he had been expected to lead the forces supporting the nomination of Senator Stuart Symington, a fellow Missourian. When Mr. Truman dropped his bombshell, he promised he would hold a news conference later in the week clarifying his position. That moment is now at hand. The former president will have a brief prepared statement to deliver. After that, he will throw it open to questions. Former President of the United States, the Honorable Harry S. Truman.
Well, I'm glad to see all of you. And I'm more than happy that you're somewhat interested in politics, as I am. Well, I'm going to read this statement which I have to make, and then I'll let you fellows who are curious ask questions, and I'll ask them if I want to. This is to my friends of the radio and television audience and to the people of this great republic of ours. As you already know, I have resigned as a delegate from Missouri to the Democratic National Convention. I did this because I have no desire whatever to be a party to proceedings that are taking on the aspects of a prearranged affair. A convention which is controlled in advance by one group and its candidate leaves the delegates no opportunity for a democratic choice and reduces the convention to a mockery. I've always believed that the Democratic Party should stand for an open convention and should resist any bandwagon that thwarts or stifles the free and deliberative process of this great instrument of democracy. Don't mind that happening in the Republican convention, you understand. The Democratic Party must never be allowed to become a party of privilege where a man of modest means or no means at all cannot rise to a service in the nation. I'm speaking up at this time because I would hope that many of the delegates who have been stampeded or pressured into pre-convention commitments against their better judgments, and I know at first hand of such instances, I hope those delegates will have a chance to exercise further judgment. There's yet time before the convention opens on July the 11th for the delegates to reflect on their individual responsibilities to the party and to the nation. For this is a time of great difficulty in the world, and we cannot afford to be swayed by personal likes or dislikes. We must be careful not to permit ourselves to be moved by personal prejudices or religious bigotry. The future usefulness of the party and the restoration of direction and leadership to the nation are of such paramount importance that I am impelled to disregard the pleadings of some of my friends to remain silent about the situation that has developed. They've urged me not to do anything to upset or offend anyone by speaking up now. Well, you'll find that's hard for me to do. But I could not remain silent because I think it would be tragic if the convention were to allow any one clique to ride herd over it. To let this happen could very well frustrate the hopes and desires of the American people to return a Democrat to the White House. This is the first National Democratic Convention I shall miss since I became a United States Senator in 1934. And it is a matter of great regret and deep emotion for me to stay away from the proceedings of my party, which has honored me so greatly and has always been so kind and generous to me personally. But the times are such that the future success of the party and the restoration of leadership to the nation compel me to forego personal considerations and do whatever I can to alert the Los Angeles Convention. I want to make it clear that my disappointment at the manner in which some of the backers of Senator Joseph F. Kennedy have acted involves in no way, in my own mind, the person or qualifications of the senator himself. I think, to a great extent, Senator Kennedy is a victim of circumstances brought on by some of his overzealous backers, which is unfortunate and unfair to him. Senator Kennedy has demonstrated ability, capacity, and energy to play an important and continuing role in the party and in this government of ours. I've always liked him personally, and I still do. And because of this feeling, I want to say to him at this time, and I'm going to quote a statement that I'm making to Senator Kennedy. Senator, are you certain that you are quite ready for the country, or the country is ready for you, in the role of president in January 1961? I have no doubt about the political heights to which you are destined to rise, but I am deeply concerned and troubled about the situation we are up against in the world now and in the immediate future. That is why I hope that someone with the greatest possible maturity and experience would be available at this time. May I urge you to be patient. You will recall that I suggested to you at our meeting in Independence that all personal ambitions be put aside, and that we all join forces to seek out such a man who could unite us in purpose and in action. That's the end of the quote. And I would say to the delegates that the Democrats must not make the mistake of freezing out men who, by their public service and record, have proved themselves worthy of fair consideration by an unbound convention. I feel strongly that the Democratic Convention owes it to the people to arrive at its choice after due deliberation, no matter how long that takes. I had already given, after long consideration, my personal endorsement to the candidacy of Senator Stuart Symington from my own state of Missouri. His record in fulfilling major executive offices and assignments during my administration is exceptionally high. His voting record in the United States Senate is not only in keeping with the best liberal traditions of the Democratic Party, but completely without one single blemish of reactionary thought. Senator Symington's courage during the days of McCarthyism is typical of the man and transcends eloquence of the spoken word. In endorsing Senator Symington, I felt that we could elect him because he would have the important advantage of a united party. I'd like to have been at the convention at Los Angeles to second his nomination. But since the overriding importance at this time is the necessity for an open convention, we must be absolutely certain that all of our good men be properly sized up on the convention floor before a final choice is made. I'm going to repeat that. Since the overriding importance at this time is the necessity for an open convention, we must be absolutely certain that all our good men be properly sized up on the convention floor before a final choice is made. One good man who deserves the serious consideration of the convention is the Majority Leader of the Senate, Lyndon B. Johnson. Senator Johnson has grown in skill and esteem in his services to the nation and to the Democratic Party. He's made a deep impression on the country, and no self-appointed spokesman for special causes should be allowed to detract from his ability and dedication to the liberal and progressive principles of the Democratic Party. No section of the nation need have any concern or doubt as to where he would stand when the interests of everyone in the country are involved. Another man we place high among those from whom the final choice should be made is the Congressman and former Governor Chester Bowles of Connecticut. Congressman Bowles combines to an exceptional degree the experience and maturity of a well-rounded public servant, both legislative and administrative. He has also served his country abroad as one of our far-seeing and distinguished ambassadors. The Democratic National Committee has wisely assigned him the sensitive role of chairman of the Platform Committee, the most important committee during a convention that exists. I hope, too, that the convention will take a good look at Governor Robert B. Minor of New Jersey, whose record as governor and whose national reputation entitle him to attention beyond that of a favorite son. Let me suggest the following distinguished Democrats who have earned the right to be thought of in connection with the presidency. There's Senator Joseph Clark of Pennsylvania, Senator Eugene J. McCarthy of Minnesota, Senator Henry M. Jackson of the state of Washington, Senator Albert Gore of Tennessee, Governor Orville Freeman of Minnesota, and Governor Leroy Collins of Florida, who is the permanent chairman of the convention. I know that by making this statement, I will disconcert some and provoke sorrow and anger in others. And I'm used to doing that. I wish it were not necessary for me to do this. I don't want to do it, but I'm convinced that it is necessary and that the party and the voters be alerted. I would remind those who might be tempted to jump to the wrong conclusion that I did my best in 1956 to warn against a closed convention and the danger of disregarding the deliberative process we must maintain in democratic conventions. Let's not make the same mistake twice in a row. Let the Democratic Convention nominate a man who not only can be elected, but who will know what to do to pull the country out of its difficulties, the difficulties we are in now, both at home and abroad. Now, it's up to you to do that. That's the reason I'm talking to you. That's the end of the statement. Now, if you fellas want to ask some questions, I'll try to answer them for you. What is it?
Mr. President, Bergholzer of NBC, are you...
I want you to name what your connection is and what your own name is, and then ask your question. Go ahead, Bergholzer. You asked me many a question. What's on your mind?
Mr. President, are you saying here that any of these several men whom you listed would be better qualified as a nominee this year than Senator Kennedy?
I'm saying that any of those men that I've named would be qualified to be President of the United States. I'm not comparing them with anybody.
President Clark of the St. Louis Globe Democrat, in several places in your talk, you referred to the tactics of the backers of Senator Kennedy without giving any particulars. Can you tell us what you have in mind?
It's there in that statement, and if you can't make it out, why, you're not a good reporter.
Von Frem, CBS News. In your statement, sir, you say that you think Senator Kennedy is a victim of circumstances brought on by some of his overzealous backers. Would you include among these overzealous backers the party chairman, Paul Butler?
I'll let you make up your own mind on that. I told you I was not naming any individuals. And if you fellas don't know what's been going on, as I said to Marsh a while ago, you're not very good reporters.
Joe Kramer, KCML News, Kansas City, Mr. President. Even though you don't attend the convention, is there any possibility, I'm wondering, that you might be in the city of Los Angeles while the convention is going on?
You never can tell.
Iceland, CBS News, Mr. President. With this statement, are you saying that you will not actively campaign for Stuart Symington?
I didn't say that at all. You read the statement very carefully. I've made the best statement I can about the men I think are qualified, and of course my preference is Symington.
Mr. President.
Randall, did you have something to say? You were on your feet a while
yes,
ago.
Yes,
I'll see you all before you get through.
Did any one thing prompt you to make your decision not to go to the convention?
Yes, because I don't like a fixed convention. What was?
Are you still for Symington?
Yes. What was this? Come on, let me.
Oh, Stryker of United Press International, Mr. President. From your statement, could we say that Senator Johnson is your second choice to Senator...
I have no second choice. My choice is Symington. I don't go on seconds. I'm just telling you who's good man.
Leeds, NBC News. Won't your absence at Los Angeles actually hurt the chances of Senator Symington?
I don't know. Your judgment's as good as mine on the subject. I'm just a former delegate to the convention. Now, you're a reporter, and you ought to get all the information on the subject and satisfy yourself. You had something to say.
Fred Moore, Associated Press. You urged Senator Kennedy to be patient. Do you mean by that you think he should step aside this time?
I didn't say so. You read the thing for what it says and don't try to put something into it that's not there.
And the American Broadcasting Company, Mr. President, what do you expect the convention to do now? Do you still expect the Kennedy bandwagon to go ahead?
I don't know what'll happen. Your guess is as good as mine. You know, I've always said that I didn't like political prophets or political posters. Neither one of them know what they're talking about.
Benjamin Sosslyn, Wichita Beacon. Mr. President, would you think that Johnson and Symington would make a good team?
I'm not setting up any team. The convention will have to do that.
Mr. President, Don Jansen, New York Times. You listed several people, but not Mr. Stevenson. What do you think of him as a possibility?
Stevenson or anybody else has a right to be a candidate if he wants to be, and that if the convention nominates him, he'll be the candidate. I don't have anything to say about that.
Mr. President, Harold Slater of the News Press, St. Joseph. Have you canceled your hotel room reservation?
Not yet.
Mr. President, Von Prem, CBS again. Should the convention select Senator Kennedy to be the presidential nominee, would you actively campaign for him?
I shall support the ticket. It'll depend on what the National Committee wants me to do as to where the action will take place or not. It's not up to me. I always do what I'm asked when the show's over.
Kramer, KCMO News. Mr. President, what are the conditions, if any, under which you would change your mind and attend the National Convention after all?
There are no conditions.
Mr. President, Lou Irwin, KPOLK, BCTV, Los Angeles. When you read the statement, to begin with, you, instead of reading John Kennedy, you read Joseph Kennedy. Could this perhaps have been a Freudian slip?
I didn't intend to say Joseph.
Do you have any concern
It's in the thing, as it should be, and the name of the young man is John.
Do you have any concern about the activities of the
That's
elder Kennedy?
That's for you to decide. I have no comment on that question.
Mr. President, Bergholzer, NBC. In your statement also, you said you had a remark for those who you said might be tempted to jump to the wrong conclusion. Could you clarify what wrong conclusion you had in mind?
Well, now, you're a reporter, and you boys will have plenty of wrong conclusions, so go ahead and make them. Then I'll talk to you about them after you've done it. There'll be plenty of wrong conclusions. Don't worry
Darryl
about that.
Darryl Sifford, Jefferson City Post Tribune. Would you care to end your career as a public servant back in the Senate?
What's that?
Would you care to end your career of public service back in the Senate representing Missouri?
We're well represented from Missouri by two very capable senators. And I have no ambition for further public office. I've had everything from precinct to president.
Mr. President, Leeds, NBC News. Do you think Senator Kennedy could win in November?
That's up to the voters. I can't tell you. As I told you, I'm not a political prophet.
Don Jansen, New York Times again. I wondered if Mr. Butler's denial of any rigging satisfied him.
I haven't seen it. I'm not in a controversy with Butler. He caused the controversy for himself. I didn't do it.
Fred Moore, Associated Press. Mr. Butler said the other day that you're associating yourselves with those who want him ousted. Do you have any comment on that?
No comment. The National Committee will take care of that after the convention meets and nominates a ticket. The presidential nominee will decide on the man that he wants for chairman of the National Committee. That's always customary. I thought all of you reporters knew that.
Mr. President, Von Prem, CBS News again. Adlai Stevenson has been urging that Mr. Khrushchev be left out of the campaign. I know this is going a little bit beyond Los Angeles, but do you share his feeling that that the two candidates from the two major parties should stay away from discussing Mr. Khrushchev's role during the campaign?
I didn't even know Khrushchev was in the campaign. He's beneath contempt so far as I'm concerned, so you can draw your own conclusions.
Mr. President, Bert Trask, Post-Dispatch. You say here that the Democratic Party must never be allowed to become a party of privilege.
That's correct.
Do you feel that in this current campaign that money has been an important factor in the development of leading candidates?
You have to draw your own conclusion from that. I've made my statement right there in that statement that you have in your hand. That's as far as I intend to go.
Mr. President, Bergholz, NBC, you have
You're
said...
this morning.
You've said, Mr. President, that you know at first hand of some instances of delegates being pressured.
You're not going to get them from me.
Are you taking any steps, Mr. President, to inform the delegates as a whole of these instances
the
about
delegates,
what you know?
The delegates themselves know all about that information. I don't have to tell them. Don't you think you've had enough?
I
want to shut you off.
Again, sir. In your question to Senator Kennedy, you ask Senator, are you ready, a statement to him, are you ready that you are quite ready for the country or that the country is ready for you in the role of president in January 1961? Are you saying that you'd rather have Senator Kennedy wait perhaps until 1964?
All I've got to say is in the piece there, and you have to draw your own conclusions, which you'll do anyhow. I think you've had enough. Now, Burkholzer, what about it this time?
Mr. President, if we all leave here and write that you have started your own Stop Kennedy movement, you won't deny it, sir, will you?
We're waiting to see. If you make any such statements, you may be in a lot of trouble. I think that's enough for you. I've tried to be as patient as I can, but you've had enough.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Patience. I'm most happy to see all of you. It's like old times. And I try my best to give you straight answers to your questions. And I've never dodged any issue, as you all know. Now, go out and do what's best for the country. It's up to you.
So with the familiar thank you, Mr. President, Harry S. Truman has concluded another one of his many, many news conferences. This one in Independence, Missouri, not quite as it used to be in the White House in Washington, D.C., where he used to call reporters into the circular room in his office. Mr. Truman is still on the stage, still joking and talking to reporters, many of whom are old friends of his who covered him during the late 40s and early 50s when Mr. Truman occupied 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. This news conference here today was somewhat different than the ones he held in Washington for another reason, too. In addition to reporters, there were some 50 or 60 of us here. Mr. Truman had many of his old-time friends and admirers from his hometown here in Independence in the auditorium to hear him as he issued what may become a rather historic document in this campaign year of 1960. There are about 250 people here in the room. They're now beginning to slowly file out. Of course, the big question right now that remains to be answered, and that answer will certainly come in Los Angeles, is just how much strength the president's stand today, the former president's stand today, will have on the delegates in Los Angeles, who will begin moving into Los Angeles sometime next week for the convention, which begins a week from Monday. It might be recalled that 4 years ago, in 1956, former President Truman became disenchanted with Governor Adlai Stevenson and preferred to have then-Governor of New York State, Averell Harriman, be the nominee for the Democratic Party. On that occasion, Mr. Truman held a similar news conference. That was in Chicago, and at that time, it didn't have too much effect on the delegates who went for Adlai Stevenson on the first ballot. Now today, Senator John F. Kennedy, the front-runner from Massachusetts, finds himself in somewhat the same situation as did Adlai Stevenson in 1956. For Kennedy now, it is a matter of trying to keep the delegate strength he already has and get the extra votes which are needed to put him over the top at 761 delegates on an early ballot in Los Angeles. Former President Truman, to this reporter anyhow, who has covered him many, many times in Washington, was certainly his old bouncy self. As you certainly noticed, his answers to questions were short and to the point. He appears in excellent health, a very fine color, and seemed to be enjoying himself enormously. I'm sure that that quality came through on your television tubes, too. One minor mystery which Mr. Truman now seems to have raised is whether he will, in fact, stay at home and not go to Los Angeles. In answer to questions, he disclosed that he had not given up his hotel room in Los Angeles and said only that he would not go to the convention hall. Another matter of some interest in President Truman's statement was the fact that for the first time he did mention names other than that of Senator Stuart Symington, his colleague from Missouri here, whom he has been pushing for constantly in the past month. As a matter of fact, ever since Kennedy won in West Virginia Senator Truman, President Truman has been working very hard for the nomination of Senator Symington. Now today, for the first time, he mentions many other names, including at the top of the list, the Majority Leader of the Senate, Lyndon Johnson, and Chester Bowles, who incidentally is a close campaign advisor on foreign policy for Senator Kennedy, and then a whole host of favorite sons and others who have been mentioned from time to time. Senators like Clark of Pennsylvania and Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota, Henry Johnson of Washington, who has been mentioned off and on as a possible running mate with Senator Kennedy should the Massachusetts hopeful get the nomination. Also, Senator Gore of Tennessee, Governor Orville Freeman of Minnesota, Governor Leroy Collins of Florida. Indeed, Mr. Truman seemed to be urging almost anybody to be considered by the convention in an effort to break what he considers a rigged convention in favor of Senator Kennedy. We have here now with us on our CBS microphone Thomas Gavin, who is Mr. Truman's alternate, or was in 1952. Mr. Gavin, are you going to be going to Los Angeles next week?
I planned on going, but I'm not going now that President Truman isn't going.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the current sense of the Missouri delegation? Do you think they are going to stand hard in a unit rule behind Senator Symington?
I'm sure they will. I feel positive that they will. As far as I know, they're all for Symington.
Is the fact that former President Truman today mentioned Lyndon Johnson and a whole host of others indicate to you that some of the support that had been for Senator Symington here in this state and in the Midwest might be crumbling a bit?
No, I'm sure that it hasn't been. And as far as we know, at least, they still have the unit rule, and they'll keep the unit rule until they're released by Symington or until they have a meeting and agree that they're going to drop it.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And so no matter how any of the delegates feel, if the majority's for Symington, that all the votes go for Symington.
Possibly you could clear up a little mystery for us here. President Truman said that while he didn't plan to attend a convention hall, he had not canceled his hotel room. Do you have any thoughts about his possibly going to Los Angeles?
No, I haven't any thoughts at all about it. I know they're still trying to get him out there, and I have reservation also, but I had a planned vacation with my wife and family, children, on the way out and on the way back. So I haven't canceled, but that's not indicative of anything, really, as far as the convention is concerned.
I've been passed a note here, which I don't quite understand, but possibly you can throw some light on it. Could you please tell us about the sealed orders in 1952?
Oh, I was the president's appointed alternate for President Truman, President Truman only, in 1952. And I went to Washington to get the message that who he wanted in 1952, and I asked him to put it on a piece of paper and make it plain and seal it and hand it to me, and I would open it at the convention when we polled the Missouri delegation, and that would tell who he was for.
And that name was?
Well, the name in the envelope was Barclay, but on Wednesday of that week it was changed to Stevenson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gavin, for letting us chat with you. That's the story from the Harry S. Truman Memorial Library in Independence. Charles Von Fremd reporting for CBS News.
Through the facilities of KCMO-TV, CBS Television has presented a special news conference with the former President of the United States, Harry S. Truman. Your reporter was CBS News Washington correspondent Charles Von Fremd. Produced by Lou Scholenberger and Norman Gorin, directed by Al Scully, this special program, a presentation of CBS News, has come to you from the Harry S. Truman Library in Independence, Missouri.